Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
We are special breakfast people here at Pantsuit Politics, but not just when Beth and I are on the road. The truth is, I want something warm from the oven every Saturday morning and Sunday morning. It's just the truth. It makes it feel special. Makes it feel exciting. I don't want to work at it. So the first time I ever saw Wild Grain, which is bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries, I was obsessed. You guys, I've been a member for over a year. It's amazing. It's so easy. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. You can fully customize your Wild Grain box. You can choose any combination of breads, pastas, pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit to start your subscription. Sometimes I make one single croissant just for me because I want to feel special and they're so good. You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit. That's wildgrain.com/pantsuit, or you can use promo code pantsuit at checkout.
Welcome to Pantsuit Politics, where a woman from the right
and a woman from the left accessorize the news with a fresh perspective.
Hi, everyone. It's Beth and Sarah. Thanks for joining us for our third episode of Pantsuit Politics. We have a packed agenda this week, so we'll get right to it with the Pearls, which is our spotlight on recent news items. And we have breaking news at the time that we're recording this, Sarah. Bobby Jindal has dropped out of the presidential race. Game-changing moment, I'm sure, from your perspective.
I'm sorry. Is that an official? That's my official reaction. I'm going to go. One down. How many left?
Lots to go. He came out swinging in that last undercard debate, and I think he just could never find his breakout moment. And I'm happy that he recognized it so that we can move on with our lives. So speaking of Republican debates, at that last one, there was a question one of the moderators posed to all the candidates. And he talked about the importance of working across the aisle and ask each candidate to name one single Democrat they respect. And I was so disappointed that none of the candidates would answer that question. Like, I thought that was a good question. In the spirit of pantsuit politics, we thought it might make sense to add a bipartisan pearl to our discussion and spend a quick minute on one person or idea from the opposite side of the ideological spectrum who we respect. So, Sarah, do you want to start us off there?
I'll start with my classic response, and I promise to branch out beyond this person as the weeks go by. But, oh, man, I love me some Olympia Snow.
Do you?
I do. I think she has such dignity, and she's so smart, and, you know, she's the kind of conservative I really respect. I don't think anybody would classify Olympia Snow as an ideologue,
right?
So definitely starting out strong with Olympia Snow. That's my pick.
I think I have a similar answer because I always start with Dianne Feinstein.
Oh yeah.
Like, even where I don't agree with her, what a serious, thoughtful leader she is. And she is not afraid to dive right into the toughest issues. I think she shows tremendous courage in some of her foreign policy work, particularly. So Dianne Feinstein is definitely someone I admire.
And I'm embarrassed to say that until the fictionalized movie, it was it a yeah, it was a fictionalized account of Harvey Milk's life. I had no idea what role she played in that whole situation. Did you know this?
I did not. And I mean, don't you feel like her life needs to be its own movie eventually?
Yeah, somebody needs to get on that.
They really do.
Yeah. Whoever's listening, we're waiting for the Feinstein biopic. Somebody make that happen.
Hey, Republican candidate, see how not hard that was? It was not hard at all.
Not hard. Although, was it a coincidence that we picked women?
Probably. I was just thinking that. I'm sure our male listeners are like, yawn, please come up with a man. We'll do men sometime,
we'll do men.
Though.
For we'll
sure.
Men. Yeah, we'll do men.
Okay, so moving on to a little bit more serious topic. We of course, in today's main segment, The Suit, have to talk about the attacks on Paris and what's going on in the world. And just to set that up, we thought we would do a quick recap of what's been happening, because as some people are quick to point out, you know, Paris is the third in recent attacks. Even though it's gotten the most press, it certainly isn't the only thing that's happened lately. So just briefly, on October 31st, a Russian plane flying from an Egyptian resort city to St. Petersburg went down. All 224 passengers on that flight were killed. And there's been some reluctance to say exactly what happened because so many countries are involved in the investigation. But today, most officials are saying that it was 99.9% certain to have been a bomb. And the intelligence chatter leads folks to conclude that ISIS is likely behind this bombing. Then last Thursday in Beirut, two suicide bombs were detonated in a Shiite neighborhood. This neighborhood is a Hezbollah stronghold, and 43 people were killed by those suicide bombers. Again, most officials believe that this was an ISIS attack, and ISIS has taken credit for it. And then, of course, on Friday, we had just the eruption of terror in Paris, where 129 people were killed at bars, restaurants, a concert hall, and a soccer stadium. And as we know, ISIS has taken credit for that, and the French president, François Hollande, has declared this to be an act of war. And so we'll transition from that to our segment, The Suit, where we dive into this topic a little bit more. So, Sarah, I thought it might make sense for us to take a step back, because as much as we all get the social media view of what happened in Paris, it's complex in a way that I think is more than just, hey, some terrorists hit Paris.
And can I just say, too, that I am, I've been a little frustrated by the social media aspect of the reaction to the terror attacks in Paris. I feel really upset that I've been, I feel like there's this undercurrent of, well, it's almost like you don't get a right to be sad about Paris. It's either you don't live there or all these atrocities happened in other places. I even read this, and people, you know, complaining about the French flag overlay that Facebook offered up. And one of the articles, they said, well, we need to mourn equally, as if that's a thing, as if we have this mourning tokens and we can pass them out one at a time. And I just feel, you know, I was totally sickened when I realized what was happening in Paris. I was at a restaurant in Paducah, and I forced the bartender to turn on CNN, and I was totally terrorized and nauseous and sick. And it's not that I don't feel so upset and traumatized by other atrocities in the world, but I just feel like I don't think there's any shame in saying that the scale of this attack was really terrorizing. And the fact that it went on for a while, the fact that President Hollande was at the soccer stadium where the suicide bombers went off, that's a big deal. You know, that is a really big deal. That's not to downplay other bombings and the other people who lost their lives. But I feel like there was this kind of, oh, people just care because it's Paris. Or I don't even really know. Like, why is there a wrong way to grieve? Is there a wrong way to react to an event like this? I mean, it's all very complicated, I understand. But I got really frustrated, I felt like, with some of the social media chatter surrounding the Paris attacks, especially initially.
It is kind of weird, I think, how people want to take a position on other people's reaction to crisis.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, Facebook especially sets up the situation where, like, I think we all feel like we're press secretaries or something. Like, it always amazes me how it's like everyone has to issue a statement on every event, which has kind of made me drop out of that whole thing because just watching it from other people, I think, like, maybe the world doesn't need a statement from me on this particular moment. I don't know.
I just feel like if you're personally, I don't feel shamed because I'm personally invested in Paris because I've been there and I've never been to Lebanon. You know, like, I am very personally invested in Tunisia because I've been there. I've traveled there. And I think that that's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying I feel this on a deeper level because I have a personal connection to that place. Like,
that's not the
same. Yeah.
I don't even think you have to justify it in that way. I mean, Paris is in just way of life, something that most Americans can relate to. Mm-hmm. More than what's happening in the Middle East. And I'm sorry that that's the fact, but bombs going off in concert halls and, you know, sports stadiums and bars, that resonates with us, right? Mm-hmm. That's our lifestyle here. And it's scary. And I think it's perfectly fine to mourn that. I get a little bit overwhelmed with what feels like the bandwagon approach sometimes. You know, I see, like, everybody's profile picture changes, and mm-hmm. I don't know. There is a point where I think, are all these people really personally invested in this? Or, and, like, are some of these folks the same people who were all, like, freedom fries, anti-France at some point? You know, so there are parts of me that prickle a little bit at what feels like the sheep-like effect of some of these things, and sort of like people just wanting to participate in crisis, mm-hmm. even if they don't really have any clue what's going
on. Well, I'm on record as how I feel about tragedy trolls, so.
That's right. And I mean, nonetheless, I try to come back to, it is good in moments like this to have shared humanity mm-hmm. in whatever form that takes. And I think the least productive thing we can do is judge whether other people have a right to respond emotionally mm-hmm. to a tragedy.
Well, and I will say that to speak to the point you were continuing to, that this ISIS has grown largely and under agreement from most foreign policy experts out of the Syrian civil war, which is something you and I discussed, I guess it was 2 years ago in 2013, when President Assad used chemical weapons against his own people, and you and I both posted on this. So what did you want to add about rewinding to really, everything didn't start in Paris. That I think we can all agree on.
I think that's right. Everything didn't start in Paris. And it's important to understand the context, because in our reaction to the Paris tragedy and also in President Hollande's approach, we need to understand where this originated and why we have some serious issues to consider about our partnership or lack thereof with Russia. Uh-huh. So the Syrian civil war has been going on for several years under Bashar al-Assad. As Sarah mentioned, he has tortured the Syrian people. This precipitated the refugee crisis that we're seeing now.
I will interject to say that I looked up the current tallies. It's a number that's so hard to comprehend, but the United Nations estimates that somewhere between 150,000 to 200,000 Syrian citizens have lost their life in the war already.
And it's important to understand that the refugee crisis comes from this civil war, not mm-hmm. from ISIS. Mm-hmm. So I think in some ways ISIS has just come in and exploited the situation. That may be an oversimplification, but certainly Assad is at the root of what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And so as Sarah mentioned, we sort of debated before we had even had the notion of pantsuit politics. We debated on her blog about whether the United States should intervene in that civil war. And I took the position at the time that the United States should not, because I felt like, and I still feel this way to some extent, we don't understand the Middle East enough to successfully bring our military power to that region. I feel like there are racial and ethnic and religious and socioeconomic issues that are, you know, hundreds of years old. And as much as we've studied those issues, well, I'm not sure that everyone who tries to make decisions about that region has studied those issues, but even those who have, it is just hopelessly complex. And my point was, if more violence would solve the violence in the Middle East, the Middle East would be good now,
because
there has been so much violence in that area. Sarah had a different feeling about it.
Mm-hmm. I posted that. I mean, I think basically it's incredible. My perspective was, as a mother, I don't think we should interfere because I'm fearful for my own children. As a mother, it's very hard for me to see the suffering of other mother and children and not say, if it was me, if I was Syrian, I would want somebody to come to our aid. If I was a Syrian mother and chemical weapons were being used against my children, I would think, where is the rest of the world?
Right.
Where are they? Why are we here by ourselves? And so I think, and I still feel like that to a certain extent. I was listening to Anne Marie Slaughter, who is famous for her Women Can't Have It All piece she wrote in The Atlantic a couple years ago about the work-life family balance, when most people know her name, but is actually a foreign policy expert and worked for the Secretary of State when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. And, you know, she said, basically, this was wholly and completely predictable. We should have instituted a no-fly zone to at least prevent the delivery of further weapons into Syria and to prevent Assad from doing what he did, which was attacking his own people. I mean, it's not that simple anymore. We basically don't have a rebel group to support that aligns with our interests. Russia was at a certain point claiming it was defending Assad by bombing these rebel group or by bombing, bombing the rebel groups, but was actually bombing ISIS, I think. And so I think you're right. I think part of a huge piece of this puzzle is, it feels like to me that it's a lot of chess between Russia and the United States with hundreds of thousands of lives in the balance. And, you know, I heard somebody describe today Putin's, approach to the world is basically like, we need autocrats there. We need autocratic dictators like Assad, like Saddam Hussein, like Muammar Gaddafi. That's how you keep the region in check. I don't agree with that, but, you know, I think it... When we go in and we try to take those people out, it doesn't lead anywhere good either. Which is, I think, the point that you're making. It's complicated. We can't just go in and put in somebody else. We can't take out somebody else and support rebel groups. I mean, I don't really know the answer, except for when we get involved, we never make it better.
Well, and I think part of what we're seeing now is we also get involved, and that's as far as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't committed to anything. Like, the dialogue that you and I had on your blog about our intervention in Syria is kind of what you've seen this administration work through. It's like they're thinking out loud, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to do this, but we have to do something. Okay, so let's do as little as possible.
And why I understand, like, I mean, I understand it. I don't agree with it. It did not make me feel better when George W. Bush came out on 9/11 and said, they're going to hear us. It did not make me feel better. It disgusted me personally. But I do understand that instinct. And I do understand that everybody wants President Obama to stand up right now and say, and do what President Hollande said and did and say, we're just going, you know, we're at war and we're going to bomb them into oblivion. Like, I get that instinct, but how many times do we have to learn that it doesn't really work that well? And I have so much respect for President Obama standing up and saying, like, I'm sorry that I am not giving you everyone the answer that they want to hear, but there is no easy answer here, and I'm not going to pretend like there is.
Yeah, it's just, he does have to have some kind of answer, though. You know, Mark Halperin said this morning on a show that I was watching, there's only one president of the United States, and sometimes the world needs that president of the United States to make everyone feel better, you know? And I think that, you know, we're referring a little bit, I think, to President Obama's comments at the G20, mm-hmm. Where he was, I mean, he just seemed really angry.
Well, I think what had happened is that he explained himself like, he'd gone into depth into his strategy with regards to ISIS. Now, he does have things to answer. He should have obviously never said that thing about them being the JV team. Although, I mean, I guess I get where he was coming from. They branched off from Al-Qaeda. But this JV team has gone off the rails. It's no longer a JV team. Right. And so he needs to just say, at the time that felt accurate. I shouldn't have been flippant about it. I mean, I don't know if he needs to apologize to those remarks or not, but I understand why people are reacting to that. But it seemed, from what I could tell, is that he'd said in detail his approach, and then the guy, who I believe is from Fox News, so here's where I insert my snarky partisan surprise. and he was trying to do a gotcha, like, why don't we just go get the bastards? That's not a real question. That's not an intellectual, thoughtful approach at the G20. Why don't we just go get the bastards? Like, even if we're all feeling that, even if we want to hear him say that, like, he was trying to do gotcha. And I think President Obama was like, ugh, I just answered. I've been thoughtful in my answers for like 15 minutes here. And you're trying to get, I know who you're from. I know you're just trying to get me in a gotcha answer. I think that was his frustration. At least that's what I picked up on.
At the same time, though, like, you can't approach a discussion about this many people who were killed on a Friday night in the same kind of intellectual tone that you would use to discuss, I don't know, nuclear theory in a college classroom.
And he has it in him. I mean, like, you heard him when he can pull out his, like, seriously serious preacher emotional voice when he did it after the last shooting, where he was like, I'm done. We can't do anything. Nobody cares. Like, you know, he just was, you could tell he was angry.
And he needed some of that at the G20, and he needed that to be directed not toward a reporter, but toward the situation. I'm sorry. No one feels better hearing that we're going to keep doing what we're doing, but we're going to intensify it. Like, that's a terrible word. Like, do you feel comforted at all by the idea of the intensification of our current strategy, which seems to be arming insurgents to the tune of less than 20 people, millions of dollars spent on airstrikes, sometimes for the people who are supposed to drop those bombs just coming back, not having deployed the bombs? I mean, what are we doing here? And I think there are legitimate questions about the White House's leadership on this. And I'm a person who said we should not intervene. But today, I feel differently about that.
I think the only thing that you can say without it, I mean, this president is the one campaign promise that he has kept, you know, definitively and not switched on, is he does not want us involved in the Middle East.
He doesn't want it, but he's got it, whether he wants it or not. And it's not something that's going to go away.
Also, I do think that there's something to be said for, I think that, as with every human being on the planet, his opinions and approach are colored by his personal experience. And this is a person who lived abroad. This is a person who I think, arguably better than many of our other presidents, you know, understands the rest of the world. And I know he seems cerebral sometimes, and he's not always his best advocate. But I am strangely comforted by somebody who doesn't come out and say, you know, we have to keep our heads. I mean, I love Paris. I was terrified that night. It was so scary, and it's so awful what happened in France, and people died, and that's awful, and ISIS is so, so scary. But the more I read about them, the more I think that if he comes out guns blazing, we're going to play right into all of their recruitment techniques, all of their philosophies and religious ideology. I just think, you know, sometimes the right answer isn't comforting, and sometimes the right answer doesn't make a great soundbite. And I don't know that the complexity of it all actually does strangely comfort me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Just finished A Court of Thorns and Roses and craving another fantasy world to devour? Dipsy's got you. Dive into spicy enemies to lovers tales or embark on an epic romance between immortal fae and sworn foes. They've got fantasy romance stories perfect for your morning walk, late night, or long bath. Dipsy is an app full of short, spicy audio stories. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. Discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups. And there's a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, Greek gods and goddesses, Regency era historical fiction, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
If you're looking for a very quick salon quality, but not salon priced manicure, Olive & June has you covered. We've talked about Olive & June's Mani system before. It has everything that you need for a professional manicure in one box. Salon grade tools, your choice of 6 polishes. Those polishes are going to last you for 7 days or more. The cost breaks down to about $2 a manicure. Olive & June also has press-ons if you want. What I love, though, is that Olive & June each season is coming out with new colors, and I just got a set of spring and summer colors in quick dry polish. And they say this dries in about a minute. It seemed dry to me in about 30 seconds. It was not kidding about being quick dry. I also love the light colors in this set. There is a huge range. My favorite one is called Kitten. It's like a pinkish gray. The quick dry polish gives you full coverage in 1 or 2 coats. It lasts for more than 5 days, and it is offered in more than 40 cruelty-free and vegan polishes. Olive & June just understands what's happening in our lives, that we need to move quickly, but we want to look great and feel great and have fun in the process. Visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Mani system. Well, speaking of playing into ISIS's hand, I think, you know, I've had critical words for the president. I have them for the Republican Party as well. These governors and their reaction to Syrian refugees in light of this crisis, this makes me sick.
Just stop. It's not, you don't even have any legal room to stand on. What are you even doing?
So to rewind a little bit, the United States agreed to accept a very small number relative to Europe of Syrian refugees. And again, these are people who have been displaced by al-Assad and the Syrian civil war. And in light of the attacks on Paris, you know, everybody's uncle on Facebook, I guess, has come out to say, we should not let anyone in our country. We have to vet these people. These are going to be ISIS terrorists, not legitimate refugees. And I think it's important to say factually.
Yeah, so many layers of factual. Yes. Just there's yes. So many things going on here.
Let's start factually with
the actual terrorist.
That the people who carried out these attacks in France were mostly French nationals.
Yeah, French or Belgium. Actually, can I just say, interject here, Belgium, if I'm angry at anybody, get it together. That's who I'm angry at. I don't know what's happening in these neighborhoods that are hatching terrorist plot after terrorist plot, but figure it out. Because that's in your country and easy to control. So make it happen, Belgium. Thanks. Love, Sarah.
Well, I mean, I'm laughing, but, like, there's an element to all of this where, you know, I think a problem right now, a huge problem, is the sharing of intelligence resources. Because it seems like there's so much chatter and so much information that, like, we're just, everybody's doing their own thing. And you can't possibly keep up with all of it. Especially when, have you heard this, that ISIS basically has its own help desk?
I saw that today facilitates in an email. Yeah.
And covert conversation.
A lot of it, they were conversing over a PlayStation messaging service that's really difficult to track. I mean, as technology improves, it's only going to get harder. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail. So, definitely the first thing here is the terrorists involved in the attacks on Paris were radicalized European nationals, not Syrian refugees. So let's just start with the facts. That's the problem. Radicalization, which is not something, I actually read a really great thing on Vox that was like, that's a European's problems. That is a distinctly European problem. They do not integrate immigrant populations, and for all of America's sometimes less than tolerant talk, we actually do a pretty good job of integrating immigrants. We don't have a particularly large amount of radicalized populations who feel, you know, we don't prevent people from wearing their religious garb like they do in France, for better or for worse. That's a thing they do, and that, you know, and it doesn't help this problem of radicalization. So, I mean, that's the first thing. That's not who those people were. There was a Syrian passport found that's faked. And actually, I heard today that Syrian passports are very valuable because you can claim asylum. And so you have refugees from Pakistan and other places. There's like a black market for Syrian passports because of the current refugee crisis and because they can, which I think is really interesting because you hear it's so hard if you're a refugee, but apparently in parts of Europe, it's easier to get through certain, at least, checkpoints if you have a Syrian passport. And so there's a black market for faked Syrian passports, which is what was found at the scene, but has no indication. There is no indication and has not been any indication. And all we have right now is the confirmed identities of European nationals. So unless you want to, dear governors of the South, prevent the immigration of European nationals, which, sell that one. Love to hear it. Shut up.
Well, that's the thing. So the United States is a republic, right? There are rights afforded to individual states, but we are a country also. Mm-hmm. And the idea that individual states can close their territories to people who our country has allowed to come in through the immigration process, that's
a fundamental
that's
misunderstanding of the Constitution. Lots of things that are being misunderstood. The facts, the Constitution, the law, lots of things.
Well, it's just, you know, so my belief is, I'm upset with President Obama for a half-hearted attempt to deal with the region. I'm upset with his comments at the G20. I'm upset with his tone. I am equally and perhaps more upset with these governors trying to score political points on something that they know cannot happen. Mm-hmm. I am upset with candidates on the trail trying to score points with the most fringe elements of the base by talking about this as a Muslim issue. You know, I just feel like shame on everyone right now. This is not about our politics in the United States, right? Yeah. It is about the entire world needs to come together against ISIS. And I think that's kind of how we wanted to wrap up this segment. Like, what advice would we give to the president? Like, so Sarah and Beth roll into the White House with our opposite perspectives on a lot of things. What is the right thing to do here?
Actually, you know what? I have a perspective on this. And let me ask you this. So you've said, I have a feeling I know what your answer is. And you've said, you know, you disagree with his tone and his approach. But what really bothers me about the discussion with regards to the Syrian refugees and the approach to ISIS is what I hear a lot on Facebook is that this is either I heard somebody say this is just a conspiracy to get immigrants over here and get them in the welfare system so we have more taxes and, you know, this liberal, these liberal radicals have more votes. What? I don't, what? Oh. Or, you know, like, what? No, I don't even, I'm really having trouble following your logic. And also, but what bothers me is the idea that President Obama doesn't want us to be safe, or President Obama doesn't want what's best for America. You know, like, I didn't like George Bush. I really didn't. And I really didn't agree with his approach to our safety after 9/11. But I never doubted that he wanted us to be safe. You know, so I don't understand. Like, can't we just start from the, can we start from people that we disagree with are still human beings that have the same, you know, interest that we do, which is protecting our country and being good global citizens of the world? Like, that's what bothers me. Like, I feel like, can we trust that if you and I came in and made our cases and I said, hey, you know what? I don't think we should get involved. Or if we'd made the opposite cases where we were before, that President Obama is an intelligent person invested in the future of this country and would do what he would think is best, even if it wasn't the decision you would make. Like, can we just, I think it might be a lost cause, but it really bothers me. Like, really, do we have to depend on conspiracy theories? We can't just believe in the man's humanity and go forth from there?
I don't even know how to respond to some of that. You know, look, anybody who serves in the White House, in my opinion, has to be a patriot.
Yes.
And a thoughtful, smart person who is willing to go through, let's face it, a miserable, miserable 10 years,
yeah,
you know, to get through two terms and two elections. I mean, I think we can. So we'll start with one. We presume good intent by our mm-hmm. leadership, even mm-hmm. where we disagree. And I do think, I totally agree with you. The reason he seems so cerebral is he is thinking out loud. He is yeah. grappling with these issues. He does take it seriously. He knows it's not simple. There is a lot I appreciate about that. But there's also, I think, a space and a time for clear communication and the need to comfort people with some decisive action.
So I would say that my advice, after you sent me a really great, which we'll post in our show notes and on Facebook, What ISIS Really Wants in the Atlantic by Graham Wood, a really great article in which, you know, I learned a lot about ISIS, and particularly that this, the idea that they need actual territory in order to have a caliphate, which is kind of the fundamental of their entire religious theology. So I guess my approach would be, let's line up international support and at least remove their territory. If they don't have any actual space or actual land on which to claim their Islamic state, if we send them on the run, then that's got to undermine them to a great degree.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, I cannot believe how young you look. And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. And they've even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit right. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
There's not much worse than a dry, itchy scalp. Also, when you get your hair colored and then it does not last as long as you and your stylist discussed, it could be that unfiltered, mineral-filled water is the culprit. Hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin, and about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered shower head. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that requires, unfortunately, U.S. ground troops. And I don't want to use the expression boots on the ground because these are people that, like, I am saying that are brothers, sisters, husbands, fathers, mothers. We are going to have to send people we love to that region to fight this battle. I don't see a way around that. And I hate
it. I heard somebody say the other day, like, you don't defeat terrorism from 30,000 feet in the air. It just doesn't happen that way.
So I think dealing with the caliphate is the only approach, and doing that with a coalition, and what Russia's role in that is, I have no idea. And I leave that to people a lot smarter than me to sort through. Yeah. The other thing that I would say is this is in many ways a battle of ideology. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to talk about that as a religious issue because I think that's not helpful or productive. I don't deny that ISIS is based on a very radicalized version of Islam.
And literal, a very literal version of Islam.
Yes, yes. I mean, and there are lots of religions that if you took literally and in a radicalized way would get pretty scary. Mm-hmm. So let's just be there. But I think the recruitment of people to ISIS should be countered with an international recruitment effort for productive contributions to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, if people are feeling lonely and marginalized and whatever attracts someone to an organization that will eventually ask them to strap on a bomb, can we not sell them on the idea of being an army that fights poverty, an army that mm-hmm. surrounds refugees and takes care of them? I mean, isn't there an alternative argument?
And listen, there's an interesting aspect of that. In that article, he talked about the one guy that said, like, the other literal interpretation of Islam is everybody gets free healthcare and free food and free care. So I know that that's not a comfortable thing to understand, that ISIS might be selling not just jihad, but things that appeal to people. But they clearly are.
Yes.
And we need to figure out what they are and, like you said, have something else that appeals. And I think, on a patriotic note, that when the reason we don't have a radicalized a radicalization problem that Europe has is because we do that pretty well. We have something really great to sell when people get over here. You know, I think that America is very, very far from perfect, very far from perfect. But I do think that we have, you know, the American dream for all its faults and for all its sometimes brokenness. It has an appeal, and it does work for thousands and thousands of people who come over and try to make a better life here every year.
Fundamentally, I think there is a sense of belonging mm-hmm. as American citizens. And mm-hmm. and that's true even for groups that struggle in American society. And mm-hmm. so yeah, I mean, I think that you have to combat this not only with military force, but also ISIS doesn't own social media. Like, mm-hmm. this coalition should get together and recruit just as hard Let's radicalize people on the peace side of things. You know, I've seen people on Facebook. So there are kind of two camps, right? It seems like there are the people who say no refugees in the country. And then there are the people who are like, peace, love, and harmony for everyone, you know, and both seem a little out there. But I think it's a combination of military force and diplomacy. I don't think ISIS can be defeated at a negotiating table.
No.
But I think there is a role for something other than military force in this situation.
And it can happen. I mean, I think that to go back to my beloved Tunisia, I mean, it's happening there. They've had really terrible terror attacks, but in the face of that, they are continuing on and they're having elections and they're moving. They were the start of the Arab summer, and I think that they're arguably the most successful still participant in this kind of revolution that's sweeping through the Arab world. And so it can be done, and I think that, you know, that, but people, it can't just all come from the outside either. I mean, I think that they're a perfect example of that, that it's within these communities. And there are people right there working that for those causes, absolutely, and having some success. So, well, I think that's a... Go ahead.
No, I was going to wrap up. So what do you
Yeah, I think that's what I was going to say. So I think that is a good ending. We will wrap up the suit and share some things that are making us happy this week in the heels. So, Beth, I feel like this week the things that have been making me happy are, I feel like I'm either posting super serious foreign policy things on Facebook or super silly fun things, and they are both extremes. But, hey, I guess that's the way life rolls.
Sometimes.
So my super happy thing right now is that the Dixie Chicks are going back on tour.
Yes.
I'm
Cowboy,
so excited.
Take me away. I'm so excited.
I've already purchased tickets to two different concerts. I am going to see them in Chicago with my best friend from law school, and I'm going to see them in Nashville with Nicholas. I've seen the Dixie Chicks 4 times. This will be my 5th and 6th time. I would have gone more, but Nicholas was like, be reasonable. I'm so excited. And then, again, another fun thing I saw today is that Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are co-hosting Saturday Night Live together.
Oh, I love that.
Which really does seem like a gift to the universe.
It is a Christmas present for all of us.
Yeah, it's just like the universe is like, here you go. Have some joy.
Well, so my segment for the heels this week is equally kind of trivial, but I just need to take a minute to say how much I love my crock pot and how I would die without it.
In the winter, too. Oh,
in the winter, mm-hmm. with 2 small children and 2 people working all the time. And so here's what I discovered, and I don't know where this has been all my life. Did you know that you can put a couple of chicken breasts in your crock pot and cover them with salsa?
Yeah.
And just let that simmer, and you have the most perfect shredded chicken ever.
Yeah.
For tacos or omelets or whatever.
I learned that from my friend Whitney. She's big on that.
I, like, just discovered that this year, and I hate myself that I didn't know before now. I feel like I've been depriving us of easy and delicious, juicy chicken. So, yay for my crock pot. I love
it. Well, and guess what I just read? There's a crock pot now, like a Wi-Fi crock pot, so you could turn it on from, like, your phone at work.
So I need that, and then I need, like, a couple of different sections of the crock pot so that I can have different things going on at the same time.
I thought the Wi-Fi, because that's Nicholas's issue, is always, like, I can't turn it on at the beginning of the day because it was too dry, so he'll, like, come home and turn it on for lunch or whatever, but I thought, ooh, that's brilliant, so you could just turn it on so it doesn't get overcooked.
It's so good.
I'm really into this smart home thing. I've got a segment coming up on that on our local morning show. I've been trying out the smart light bulbs and the smart thermostat. It's amazing. It's like I live in the Jetsons.
Well, I will say just a quick, like, not to add another thing, but the Nest.
Ugh.
I love the Nest.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Maybe we should do a whole heels on smart home technology.
I love that. Let's do it. Well, so we hope that you've enjoyed this episode of Pantsuit Politics. I know we covered some heavy topics, but that's what's happening in the world right now. And, you know, I'm thankful that we live in the United States where 2 women can have this discussion.
Amen.
So we would love, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, to continue the conversation with you on Facebook and Twitter, and tell us what you'd like to hear more of, and we'll see you for our next episode.
And please help us out by rating and reviewing our show on iTunes. It helps other people discover Pantsuit Politics. As always, thank you to Nicholas Holland for producing our podcast. And our intro and interstitial and outro music is Fourth and Starlight Road Instrumental by Menden and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 International License.